the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
My next guest's career has taken him all over the world, but it's his current role back home in the heart of the Liberties in Dublin that has given him the opportunity to transform one of the country's most iconic products. As a custodian of the Guinness brand, he is tasked with future-proofing a company that has been in existence since Arthur Guinness signed the famous 9,000-year Guinness lease on a then brewery site in 1759. Barry O'Sullivan, head of Diageo Ireland, you're very welcome to the programme. Barry, you grew up on the north side of Dublin in Baldoyle, a little bit outside the city, an expansive space, but close enough to the city too.
That's true. Well, actually, my parents are from both from Waterford. So, in fact, growing up, we would have spent a lot of time, you know, weekends, you know, travelling down to Waterford to meet and spend time with families. So, that was probably my early observations of, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit in the family, getting to pop into my granddad's printing works and, you know, literally get your hands dirty helping out and supporting the family business.
I'd say a printing works was a fairly fascinating place as a young child to go into, was it?
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, a real buzz about the place. And I guess what I probably took away was the passion, the pride that everybody had in their work. You know, if a big order came in, it was all hands at the pump, you know, to make sure that the customer was looked after. And I think, you know, the other thing growing up was my dad was a sales and marketing director for a frozen food company. And, you know, he was forever bringing home samples of new products to try, or, you know, getting us to listen to the latest ad that he was working on. So that was always fun and fascinating. I don't know if you remember, Richard, one of the ones that comes to mind was Findus Crispy Pancakes. I don't even know if they were a big hit at the time. I don't even know if they're still around these days.
You managed to bag a lifetime supply, did you?
I did indeed, yeah.
And did you have any idea, Barry, what you wanted to do when you were in school? You know, what was the dream career?
I have to be honest, I really didn't, you know, at that stage. It was probably only, you know, one day I remember coming back from college and my dad had left a newspaper out, and there was an ad in the paper, Mars. They had a big ad in the paper to recruit graduates, and he circled the ad and he just wrote underneath. He said, "Look, great company. Really think you should apply."
Was he giving you a bit of a hint to sort of get out and get a job, son? I mean, if my dad did that now, I'd be thinking, oh, he's giving me a message here.
I'd say there was. I'm sure there was. I'm sure they were thinking, geez, this fella now, he's been through school, been through college. And it was definitely a big nudge.
A company like Mars, I would imagine when you go into a management traineeship like that, they expect you to work very hard and they have rewards there. In other words, if you're dedicated to the company, they'll be dedicated to you. It's a sort of very much a mutual thing.
No, definitely. In fact, mutuality. So it was one of the five principles of the Mars company. And in fact, we would regularly get a chance to meet members of the Mars family, actually, which was always fascinating. And
what were they like?
Yeah, I remember one particular incident. Lovely people, by the way. Very down to earth, very humble, despite their...
And the surname is Mars, isn't it?
That's right, that's right. That's literally the Mars family. And, I mean, they couldn't be nicer people. You know, to give you a sense, whenever they used to come into town, there'd be no big fanfare. You know, they'd rock up at the... at the car rental desk at the airport and pick up, you know, a Ford Fiesta or whatever it was at the time, and, you know, drive themselves to the office. You know, there was no big fuss, very, very down to earth people. I remember one day John Mars, who he must be in his mid 80s now. He had his senior leaders in a room, and, you know, he took a Snickers bar out of his pocket and he put it on the ground and he stood on it. You know, he sort of squashed it into the floor and we're all sort of looking at him. What's this guy doing? And he said, look, you know, I gave you all the Snickers bar. That was my contribution to the legacy, you know, of the family business. What are you going to do? So it was a great way. You know, you definitely were encouraged to think big and bold and be brave and, you know, have big ambitions. So definitely sort of framed, a lot of how I see business today. You know,
when you were making your way through the Mars company and working your way up through it, you had a chance to live abroad. So anywhere interesting, any exotic places?
Yeah, look, the first one, and I should say that, you know, part of the motivation for going abroad, in addition to, Mars and having those opportunities, my partner, my wife, Priya, she's born and raised in South Africa, but of Indian origin. And, often she would say to me, you will never understand, Barry, what it's like to live somewhere so far away from all of your family, not be surrounded by your friends. And, as I've come to learn, Richard, she was absolutely right. And
Ireland. She had traveled to Ireland, so she was experiencing that herself.
Exactly. And so that was a big motivation, because, then we said, well, what are we going to do about that? Let's get up and go. And at the time, our two daughters were 3 and 1, and we went first to the Middle East. And then we went to Mexico, and then we went to Australia. Mexico, I have to say, was one place I really, really enjoyed my time there. The culture, learning a new language, that was a fantastic experience.
It can be a bit uncertain as a place to live. I lived there myself way back for a time.
Okay.
And was it a bit hairy at that point, or was it fairly safe?
Look, honestly, where we lived was very, very safe. And, I loved the culture. The people are so warm, so friendly. I wasn't particularly good at languages when I was in school. But, one of the things I was highly motivated to learn the language. I worked very hard at it. Did this thing, the idea is a full immersion. You spend a couple of weeks with a family, and it's amazing how quickly, within a few months, I was able to run the business, speaking in Spanish, and people definitely rewarded you with their time and effort and attention, because they recognized how much of an effort you were making to really understand them and their culture and speak to them in their own language.
It's a fascinating place and a fascinating culture, and there's also, though, that kind of a sense of anything could happen.
Yeah, well, that's true. One day we were in Mexico City, myself and my sales director at the time. And it's not like we weren't in the craziest of places in the city, and it was the middle of the day. But we did, unfortunately, on one particular occasion, get carjacked, essentially. So that was a little bit, at the time, a little bit scary. But, it was funny coming back into the office the next day. I think immediately everybody just assumed that was it. The guy that came over from Ireland, he's had this experience. Surely now he's just going to go home and leave the country. So
maybe they set it up. They wanted rid of Barry.
No.
And what happened? You were driving along, and did somebody flag the car down, and then it was get out of the car time?
No, that does happen, but actually, we just come out of a meeting with a customer, and I guess probably unfortunately we were wearing our suits, and despite the fact, again, we'd nothing sort of flashy. We just had a rental car, but we as we were getting into the car, we were held up literally in the car park as we'd just come out with briefcases and laptops and mobile phones and the car.
And did they steal everything, or just they wanted the car?
Pretty much everything. Yeah, I remember going to a convenience store.
But you weren't assaulted. They were sort of polite about it, were they?
They knew what they were doing. They knew what they wanted, and that that was it. They just got what they wanted, and off they went. So, but look, I mean, these things can happen. There's parts of cities anywhere in the world where these things can happen. I certainly wouldn't want that to discourage anybody from enjoying the warmth and the great culture that is there in Mexico.
Oh no, there's an awful lot to. It's a fantastic place, a great experience, great place to go. And then you decided you wanted to come back to Ireland. The Diageo job, how did that come about? Was it at that while you were away and you were coming back to the job, or were you already home?
My dad had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and frankly, we knew he wouldn't have that much longer to go. So we're really keen to get back. And, you know, definitely they missed. My two daughters were their first two grandchildren, and you know they were sorely missed, and we've been away for a long time. So you know we were in that process of thinking, well, where to next? And then the you know this call came through to say, well, would you be interested in coming to Ireland? And when I found out who it was Diageo and Guinness, I just thought, crikey, this is a great chance to be able to write a chapter, I suppose, of the incredible story of Guinness in Ireland. You know, who wouldn't want to have a chance to have a crack at that?
And after so long in one company in Mars, did it feel very different going into just a different business?
I guess it did. Funny, during that time, as you say, because it was still COVID, you know, everything was being done on screens and Zoom. And so that was probably, you know, the challenging part, right? Because actually, as a company, I've found it, you know, very similar values, culture, even though it's a public limited company as opposed to family business per se. But of course, you've got that family heritage and the family influence from the Guinness family. So there's a real connection there. And then, you know, when you're looking at the business here in Ireland, and you know, you walk through the gates and at James's Gate every day and see the you know the 1759 and. You walk past Arthur Guinness's house. I mean, it's right there beside the gates. If anybody's walked past the front gates, that building right to the left is was Arthur's house. It's where he most of his family were born there.
And what's the house like now, Barry? Is it nice?
Well, funny you ask. They've just done up actually a couple of the rooms on the ground floor. Brought them back to life. Their dining room and a lot of the paintings on the wall there and the portraits would have been the original ones that were there back in his day.
They didn't find any money stashed under the floorboards or in the walls. No. Bags
not yet, Richard.
Gold crowns.
I dare say there's people still looking. I mean, it's such a vast site, you know.
It's interesting when you look at the wider Guinness site in that area and how it has changed over the last 15, 20 years. Because tourism, you could always go to the brewery for a very long time, but it has really expanded with the storehouse. And then the enterprise hub where buildings were made available for, you know, entrepreneurs and startup businesses. And now there's a whole other phase as well, which is a big property development, which I think will include residential as well.
That's right. So what's incredible, in fact, if you think about it, we've got planning permission for the full redevelopment of essentially a 12-acre part of the site, the upper part of the site. So the part that kind of runs from that front gate that I was talking about on Thomas Street right up to the Guinness storehouse itself. And it's going to be called the Guinness Quarter. It's going to be, as you say, a mixed-use development with hotels, with restaurants, with community and cultural spaces, apartments, social housing. So just fantastic. And I mean, to think that we got the planning permission for that without a single objector is really something that's quite incredible.
And how will that work, Barry? That's a Guinness or Diageo site. Mm. You have a building partner because you're not in the building business. And then you'll sell those apartments or those residences. And what happens to the ownership of the site?
So what happened? So there was an open, you know, tender process. Ballymore won that process. So they're our developer. And so now that we have planning permission, basically they're in the process now of seeking funding for the different phases of that development.
And do you guys put money in, or this is just something between them and their funders?
So that's something between them and their funders. So and then as each part of the development gets completed, that's when ownership passes to the new owners.
One of the things I'd imagine that can be a bit complex about running Diageo in Ireland, I'm thinking particularly about Guinness, but also there are a whole load of other brands as well, and Harp and everything, and Bailey's as well as Diageo brand. But this idea and the relationship that Ireland has with drink and with alcohol, it's a huge part of our heritage. It's a huge part of our social life. And Guinness has a very prominent sort of almost special part in that sort of heritage and that aspect of it. But at the same time, people have to become more aware about alcohol and health. It's regulated a lot more strictly around advertising and so forth. There's a balance that has to be struck there. But equally, alcohol consumption in Ireland is falling and has fallen.
People may not realise, but alcohol consumption in Ireland is down 30% from its peak in around the year 2000. And I've absolutely no doubt this current generation is the generation that will normalize moderation, and that's one of the biggest trends that we see, and we see it coming through with the development, accelerating with the development and bringing to market products like Guinness 0.0, which has just been a runaway success. You know, we've seen 50% increase in Guinness 0.0 draft sales alone in the last 12 months.
Why do you think it's been so successful? And lots of other beer brands have got zero versions out now. It's become a big thing. Why do you think the Guinness 0 has done so well?
I think it's so close to the original. It's brewed as a regular Guinness first. And what happens is it goes through an additional process. It's a cold filtration process. It's slow, it's gentle on the liquid. And the reason that's really, really important, again, the technical team in the brewery would explain this better, but beer doesn't like heat, and some of the other beers, you know, they might use heat to burn off the alcohol, but that really has an impact on the flavor. So it does, of course, add, you know, extra time, extra complexity, extra cost, and it does take a lot of capacity. So essentially, there's a lot of investment has gone in to bring it to life, and just in the last couple of weeks, actually, we've announced additional investment brings to a total now 60 million to increase the capacity that we have, because believe it or not, despite investing in capacity just a year ago, we're almost running out. So,
and that's in James's Gate.
That's at James's Gate, absolutely, yes. So 5%, if you can imagine, of everything that's produced, all the Guinness that's produced rather in James's Gate today is actually a Guinness 0.0.
You're expecting it to go up then, really,
absolutely,
as a percentage, a whole lot when you do that.
Yeah.
And what about you guys have been criticised in relation to alcohol and drinks companies and sports sponsorship. And the criticism has sometimes been that you're using Guinness 0.0 as the visual branding when you're saying we're not promoting alcohol, but really it's the same branding as Guinness itself. It's just got this little blue 0.0 on it. Is that a way of getting in underneath the intentions of the regulations?
No, honestly, it really isn't. In fact, on the contrary, there's clear evidence now to point to the fact that the non-alc market, that 0.0 market, has actually grown exponentially because of the investment we've put in. And in fact, we can see that, honestly, we're only catching up with some of our European neighbours. So if you look at markets like Spain or Germany, consumption of non-alcoholic beer is actually already at levels around about that sort of 12-15%, and we're still back at that 5. So
do you make a better margin on the zero, Barry?
We don't, because of again the additional costs in bringing that to market.
It's interesting the connection between Guinness, well, certainly Stout, but even to some extent Guinness, and films and product placement in films. I saw there at one stage Aquaman 2, the movie, and it had Aquaman sitting down for a few drinks with his dad, and they were both drinking cans of Guinness straight out of the can. And I thought, is that good for Guinness or bad? Guinness is probably paid to have it there on the table as a product, but the boys drinking straight out of the can would make a lot of Irish people cringe.
I dare say they might, but that's funny. I did read a story that Aquaman specifically has actually always been a big fan of Guinness, and I read somewhere that
that's your man Jason Momoa.
That's
the actor,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So I think if you look back, I think he has done some.
Someone should tell him he doesn't have to drink it out of the can. There's another way.
Maybe get him on your show, Richard. We'll have to have a chat with him.
Point it out to him. And what about technology in the brewing process? I'm thinking about AI and also in the marketing and all of that around. I mean, so many companies are now embracing AI. Do you think those old iconic Guinness ads might someday be generated by AI?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not convinced yet personally. But you know where it will play a role, Richard, is things like you wouldn't believe the amount of digital imagery and photography that that we produce. Things like you can now have a what they call a digital twin. So again, picture that bottle of Bailey's, and AI now can essentially replicate that bottle in any language.
So that reduces your costs massively, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly creates efficiencies. There's no doubt that work would have taken, a significant amount of time to do in the past, and now it can be done in seconds.
In time, do you think it will affect jobs?
Look, the way I'm seeing it now is actually removing a lot of those repetitive tasks and things that, will free up people's time to really focus on the things that matter. I actually see it as a positive to focus on the things that are really important in serving our customers.
Well, Barry O'Sullivan, head of Diageo Ireland, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.